This episode is brought to you by my friends at Very, the creators of the famous stand-up Veridesk and other office furniture. If you're like me, you're suddenly working from home. My best productivity tip is to set up a dedicated workspace. My comfy couch or the kitchen table so close to the refrigerator and snacks wasn't really working for me. So I recently set up a fully loaded home office setup using office furniture pieces from Very, and now I've got a whole mission control in a separate room for my kids and the dogs ready to roll. Very has everything you need to transform your home workspace, from desks, ergonomic chairs, and converters that transform any table in your home into a standing desk. Products are super easy to set up by yourself with little or no assembly, usually within minutes. Shipping is free in the US and most items ship out next business day. Right now you can save 10% off Very Home Office products with the code WFH2020. See the full collection and save at Very.com. That's V-A-R-I.com and use the code WFH2020 and check out to save 10%. Now let's get back to the show.
Hi, I'm Tony Robbins and you're watching Behind the Brand.
Hi, I'm Brian Elliott. Welcome to another edition of Behind the Brand. Today I'm here with business and life strategist, number one New York Times bestseller, and philanthropist, Tony Robbins. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brian. What's the deal with the shoes? You got your tie on, you got your shoes. I'm envious.
This is product placement.
What's the product? Who's who makes the shoes?
Well, I just started running again, and Brooks sent me these shoes. It's like running on little clouds. And
okay, well, you got my attention. Can you make some size 16 for me on those?
Are you listening, Brooks? I bet they can do it.
Well, I'd like to check them out.
I usually ask my guests, how'd you get this job?
Oh, my gosh. That's a big question. I've been obsessed from a very young age with wanting to help people make their life better. And I don't think it was because I was such a good person. It's because I had a hell of a childhood. I had four different fathers. My father's alcoholics, but he was not violent. My mother was a violent alcoholic and also an abuser of prescription drugs. And I had a younger brother, 5 years younger, younger sister. So I became a practical psychologist because my mom would smash my head against the wall until I was bleeding, pour liquid soap down my throat till I threw up, thinking I was lying about something I wasn't lying about. So it was pretty brutal, but the beauty that came out of it was it made me understand, want to understand human beings, what makes them do what they do, how to shift it, how to influence it. And if my mom had been the mother I'd hoped she'd been, I wouldn't be the man I am today, which I'm proud to be. So God has, the universe has a unique way of guiding you if you pay attention to resources. And I became resourceful out of pretty much a necessity. Today, I just hate to see people suffer and I love to see people lit up. And most people settle for far less than who they are capable of being and who I think they really are in their heart and their soul. And so I bring people strategies and tools to improve their body, their emotions, their relationships, their finances, the areas of life that I think matter most.
Let's unpack that a little bit. So, where are you seeing people suffering today?
Everywhere. There's all kinds of suffering, right? I don't think most achievers, I perceive you to be an achiever, I certainly am, we would never say we suffer. You know, you get stressed, right? And you get a little frustrated at times. But if I follow the trail of your stress, it'll take me to your deepest fears. And I always believe that life is the dance between what you desire most and what you fear most. That's where people play. And so I like to dig underneath and find that. So you see people suffering, you know, like billionaire clients will call me up and want me to help them with some business aspect. And I kind of see myself as a Trojan horse. I was telling you off camera, I go in there to give people what they say they want, but then I deliver what they really need. And what we all need is a life that's more meaningful, a life that's more fulfilling.
Well, what are they saying that they want?
Well, they'll say, you know, I want to take this division to another level, or it's an athlete and they're melting down. I got to turn Serena Williams down right now. What am I going to do? Or you also see people suffering over the littlest stuff. I mean, we live in a world where 50% of the planet lives on $2.50 a day, $900 a year. And most people worry about their finances. And I think we want to do well in that area. I've put focus on how to help people in that area. But to suffer, it's just to miss the beauty of this moment, miss the beauty of your life. And I'm obsessed with, if I can't find ecstasy in this moment here with you, Brian, as weird as that may sound, if I can't enjoy this moment thoroughly, more accolades, more economics, more business, more whatever is not going to make your life any better. But if you can enjoy each moment and you can let go of what the brain does when it starts to make up all these stories that you're stressing yourself out about, then if there's a problem, you'll handle that problem from a different place. Right. As opposed to trying to handle the problem from feeling weak or tired or exhausted or stressed or pissed off or whatever the case may be.
Well, it's easier said than done, right? I mean, do you think you think it's a function of not feeling you've got options, or you've exhausted those options, now you're out of hope? What is it?
Well, it's different for everybody, but it's the mind. You know, your brain, my brain is 2 million years old, and it's not designed to make you happy, right? It's designed to make you survive. Happiness is your job. The brain's not going to do that. The brain is always looking for what's wrong and have a fight or a flight for that, right? It's survival. And since there's no saber-toothed tiger for us to deal with anymore, now we worry about what are people thinking of us, or, you know, do I make enough money, or will this person stay with me, and all these things that the mind does. And so the mind's always going to do that. It's learning how to train yourself with a new set of habits to look at it, to be entertained by the mind, and to know that you're more than your mind. You know, I teach people techniques on how to use their body to change the mind. Because if you try to just manipulate your thoughts, you can kind of find yourself going in circles. We've all rationalized a million things. But I found that when you physiologically, when you focus on the heart, when you breathe in the heart, there's scientific studies that show that when you're really stressed, I could take your EEG and your EKG, the electrical pulses in your brain and your heart, and they look very jagged and they look nothing like each other. If all you do is physically touch your heart and concentrate on your heart and breathe in your heart, and for 2 minutes think of three things you're grateful for, simplistic as that sounds, I can show you, I can line you up, and you'll see your EEG and your EKG, first of all, go from jagged to rounded, and then they literally become identical and in sync. And when they're in sync, that's when you're in that flow state. That's when, like, the perfect words come through you, and you're like, where'd that come from? I like that, you know? That's when stress disappears. That's when you come up with that brilliant idea you've been trying to find.
You're in the zone.
And you're in the zone, but you can put yourself in the zone rather than hoping the zone shows up. And that's why I get the call from the athlete is burning down and I got to do something now, or, you know, President of the United States calls, I'm going to be impeached in the morning, Clinton tells me, what do I do? And I say, you know, could you call me sooner since it's the morning? But it's made me have to become incredibly resourceful in showing people ways to unlock what's already inside of them. I'm not here to be their guru. I'm not here to teach them to be like me. I'm here to help them unleash or reconnect to the greatest resourcefulness that's in every one of us, and we're all different.
So many questions. So the peanut gallery, outside looking in,
yes,
you know, will say to all of us, you know, what gives you the right to, and then fill in the blank.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I mean, how did you get here? Like, are you just the people whisperer? You know, we've worked with the dog whisperer, you know, are you?
Yeah, Fortune magazine put me on the cover and they called me the CEO whisperer.
You know? Yeah, like, so is this intuition to you? Is it come naturally? Is it been a learned skill?
It's 39 years of experience. My 39th year doing this. I started when I was 3. Poor joke. Mm-hmm. I wish it was true. But for 39 years, all I've done is been obsessed with what makes the difference in people, what shifts them, what affects them. And I have an insane standard of wanting to constantly improve what I'm doing so I can help more people do more. And when you do something over and over again, you concentrate your power and go deep. Most people stay on the edge. They try to, you know, dabble in a bunch of things. I just decided when it came to the human experience, psychology, real human psychology, not studying your past history, but what really drives someone, their beliefs, their values, their rules, their emotional states, their biochemistry. The more I can learn about that, then you only have so many ways to be messed up and I have unlimited ways to help you. And so we're going to keep moving. This doesn't work, something else will. I'll find the way. And when you've done that for so many years, you know, it looks like magic. There's a great book that your audience might really enjoy called The Talent Code. Have you ever read it?
I haven't.
Spectacular book. And the reason I bring it up is it explains why superachievers, like the best in the world, sometimes they come in clumps or in communities. Like, I don't remember the real number, but I think in Russia, there's a city that, small little city, has like 24 gold medalists in it. Or, you know, you look at Serena and Venus, right? And they actually go through and show that there are some common patterns that make people have these supposed gifts. And what it is a couple of things. It's this incredible concentration of power that they do. It's more than the 10,000 hours theory. It's a nice theory. I think there's value in it. But you can do something for 10,000 hours in a half-assed way, and you're not going to get deep. What these people do is they do what's called deep practice. Deep practice means they're always putting themselves at the edge where they can fail. And if you do that all the time, you're going to fail. And then if you're smart, you'll learn from it. And what you learn from it makes you that much better. And also, you're going to experiment and you're going to find things most people won't do that just keep doing something, quote, perfectly or a way that seems to succeed. And I've spent 39 years doing deep practice. I also believe, I really believe motive does matter. If I was just trying to take care of myself, which at one stage of my life, that was my focus, figure my stuff out, you get a certain level of insight because life supports more of life. If all of a sudden I had three kids instantly, I was 24 and I had a 17-year-old son by marriage, an 11-year-old, a 5-year-old, and then a child on the way, I had to grow at levels I never would have grown for myself. If you're trying to serve a community, you get a different insight. When you're trying to serve humanity, if it's not bullshit, it's really true, not what you say to other people, what's in your soul, you get a different level of insight. So it's time, it's experience, it's deep practice, and it's intent. And all those come together to create a chemistry of transformation where you can do things other people say, that looks like magic. It's not magic, it's skills that have been learned.
Is that why you wrote this last book?
This last book's on money. I wrote that book because I grew up very poor financially. I had a Thanksgiving where we had no money and no food. And my father was saying things to my mother and vice versa that you can never take back. And a man came and delivered food to our door. And it transformed me. My father left us because he was humiliated by it. I thought it was the worst day of my life. It turned out to be the best because I looked at it differently. I looked at it that this means strangers care. And I committed to find a way to give back. So I fed two families and then four. And then I had a little company. I got my employees involved. And then I got to 1 million people a year. And then for 10 years, I fed 2 million people a year through my foundation. Then I matched it for 4 million people a year. And then I decided to write this book on money because in 2008, I saw all these people, like my barber and my billionaire clients were stressed. My billionaire had no cash flow. Like he was, all his money was in his assets. He was trapped. My barber was trying to figure out how to keep his place open. I'm watching people lose their homes, and it wasn't a statistic to me. So I had a unique gift, and the gift is that I've had access. Most people don't know it, but I've coached Paul Tudor Jones. He's one of the top 10 financial traders in the history of the world for 22 straight years every day. And then I see him in person every 3 months for 2.5 hours. He's not lost money in 22 years. There's no one in his category that can claim that. He made 200% in 1987 when the stock market had its largest crash in a day, percentage-wise still. So I thought if I took what I learned from Paul, and then if I interviewed 50 of the smartest people in the world, like Warren Buffett, Carl Icahn, Ray Dalio, I could really do something of value. And so it took a lot longer. It took 4 years. I got access to people no one had got to. John Paulson, who made $5 billion in 1 year in income, genius people. And I compressed into this book so that I could really find a way that I could take, you know, a millennial who's in debt right now saying, how am I ever going to get out of this debt that I've got from college? How am I going to pull this off? Or a baby boomer who thinks, oh my God, I have no money and I'm not going to have any money before retirement, and show them the game is still winnable.
You know, a lot of people watch this show are entrepreneurs.
Great.
And so do you think that's something that we're born with? Is it in our DNA? Or is it something that can be taught and learned?
I believe it absolutely can be taught and learned. But we're born with an essence. But what we do with that essence, the development side, is really our choice. And being an entrepreneur is something that some people, it's instinctive in them that they want to run the show. They want to make it happen. They have a passion and they want to bring it to the world. And I think that's what starts a business person. The only problem is becoming an effective entrepreneur is different than being an entrepreneur. How many entrepreneurs, you know, they got like three businesses and, you know, there isn't one of them that's really working that well. It's like, you know, I'm not good with one child. Let me have two more kids simultaneously, right? So what I do is I train entrepreneurs and I train business owners. And you probably know, you know, I deal with some of the most successful business owners in the world. I don't just deal with CEOs. I deal with founder CEOs like Marc Benioff at Salesforce.com, right? He started that business right out of one of my seminars, said, I'm going to grow this to $100 million, and he's going to do $8 billion this year, you know? Or around the corner here, Peter Guber owns the Dodgers and owns the NBA Warriors, got 52 Academy Awards. So I coach people like that. But I also coach that average person who's just beginning the journey, and I teach them that the chokehold on the growth of your business is always you. It's always your psychology and your skills. And I found it's 80% psychology and 20% skills. I'm a strategist. I know the right strategy can save you a decade of time. So I'm totally into that. But I also know I can teach you all the best strategies, But if you've got limiting beliefs, if you're overwhelmed, if you're stressed out, if you're saying, I don't know what to do, you're not gonna execute it. So I work on their psychology and skills, and the promise I have is you're going to grow your business 30 to 130% this year. And when you say that somebody who's losing money or somebody who's not grown forever, they think it's impossible. But I do five-day boot camps, and I deal with companies like HomeX, which, you know, is the largest home builder in Mexico. They attribute to us $500 million in sales, half a billion, which is pretty nice. Or a chiropractor who's got an army of two, and I help him grow his business 100%. Because there's certain fundamentals that you got to learn. It's like, you know, you're not a pilot by chance, are you?
No.
Okay. If you're a pilot, anyone can become a pilot and fly a plane when the weather's good. But you have to have a special certification, it's called IFR, to read when there's bad weather or fog. You can't see anything, so you got to be able to read those gauges. Most entrepreneurs don't know how to read their gauges. They know how to do it well when the sun's out, which is why in 10 years, 96% of them are gone. 4% make it. And make it doesn't mean that they make any money. It just means they're still standing. So learning how to manage the financial intelligence of your business, learning marketing, you know, learning how to recruit, learning how to train is a skill side, but you need the psychology and the skills together to execute.
Yeah, what are some of those principles? Can you break it down?
Well, yeah, I look at business and say, you have to work harder on the business than you do in the business, which is not a new term, but it's an important way to think. I tell them, I take them through this immersion. I say, there's pillars of your business. So one of those is knowing where you really are and where you really want to go, as simplistic as that is. And when I say know where you are, like know what business you're really in. You know, when Steve Jobs took back over Apple in 97, the first thing he said is sat everybody down, and I know this because Mark Benioff was coached by him, and said, what business are we in? And everyone said, the computer business. He goes, then we're screwed because we have 2% of that business. And Microsoft in those days was 98% of that business. And he said, we got to connect to something larger. What makes us different? And they started coming up with language like, we connect people to their passions and we deliver it in the coolest way, in a way that always works. When they started connecting their passions, they said, what are people's passions? And they went, music changed the entire company. And it was pictures. And then it was communications, which led to phone. And today, you know, it's not Apple computers, it's Apple. They changed the name even. And, you know, more than half of Apple's business, they're a phone company today. They never would have done that unless they were able to change from we're a computer company to what business are we really in. The second thing I guide people through is to figure out who are you? Because we all have different gifts, right? And as an entrepreneur, we're all entrepreneurial, but some entrepreneurs are artists. They're like incredibly skilled. Maybe they do incredible design of fashion, or maybe they write great code, or maybe their skill or their gift is they can sell ice to an Eskimo. They're a great negotiator, persuader. But most people start a business are an artist. They know how to run a business. They just have something they believe in, and they go market it, but they don't grow very much because they're trying to deliver what they want to deliver, and they really don't know enough about what their client really needs and wants. The second type of person is a manager leader. The manager leader is someone who loves to manage people and processes. They don't care about making the product or service. It's the system they want to manage. The third kind of person is an entrepreneur, and I don't mean entrepreneurial. I mean a real entrepreneur loves risk. If you understand this, you got to say, who am I and who do I need? If you're an artist and you're going to grow, you need to lead a manager leader to partner with because they're going to have the structure that will let you grow. If you're just an artist, you're going to be probably self-employed and not grow at the level you want. And all this is teachable. Real fast, another component we do is what's next? Where are you right now in the life cycle of the business? Just like a child, you've got your four kids, you know, there are predictable problems when a child is, you know, an infant. You know they're going to go to the bathroom in their pants. You know they're going to get an earache. First time you have a child, you run to the hospital. Third child, it's a problem, but we got this thing handled, right? You have to know what stage you are in your business development to make it work. You've got to master marketing. You've got to master sales. You've got to master optimization. So what I teach people is we teach them all these skills. We immerse them. And then we give them 90 minutes a week, every week, to work on these. One of these seven pillars every week. With their people, their army of two or their army of 20,000. And when you work on the business, not in the business, when you realize there's two businesses I gotta manage, the business I'm in and the business I need to become. If I just work on the future, my business falls apart. If I just work on this, I'm not ready for the future and someone's gonna compete and beat me. When you do 90 minutes a week like that and you're skilled and you're trained, you can grow your business geometrically.
Walk me through a day in the life of Tony Robbins. You wake up at...
I live in six different locations, homes in a couple countries. I go to 12 to 13 countries a year. A couple of those countries I go two or three times a year, like Australia and London and so forth.
Give me a typical day, though. You know, wake up, exercise, whatever you need.
Well, I always, the one thing I do consistently, always, I get up in my morning and the first thing I do is I prime. Priming, well, I do two things. I jump in hot water and then I jump in freezing water. And I do that as a both something good for the body because it stimulates the immune system and the lymph flow. It wakes you the hell up, every organ in your body. When you drop in 56 degree water, I have these cold plunges in all my homes. And in my home in Sun Valley, Idaho, I have the river. So if it's snowing, I literally go on the river every day. And it's also a discipline of saying, Mother, you know what? I'm telling you what to do and you're going to do it. Like training my brain. When I say it, my brain and body does it. There's no hesitancy. And I've done that for decades. So it's vibrant. And then I do 10 minutes of what I call priming. Are you familiar with priming?
No, educate me.
Most of us think that our thoughts are our thoughts. And it's just not true. We're unconsciously influenced by so many things in our environment, and then our thoughts get triggered from that. I don't wake up saying, wow, I'm just going to naturally feel good every day. You know, I got 3 hours sleep last night. I don't wake up feeling that way. So today, you know, I flew from the East Coast doing all this meeting. Got here really late. I wake up first thing. I sit down and I do 10 minutes. 10 minutes to prime myself. Think of it this way, Brian, is that most people have like a highway to stress, a highway to pissed off, a highway to worry. And they got a dirt road, maybe, to happiness. And it's neurological. The more you go into states, like I'm sure you've met people that walk in and they're always pissed off or they're always worried, right? Or some people think they're funny, but they're not. But they have such a good time, they crack you up too because they have such a good time. So we prime ourselves to be a certain way. So I do 10 minutes of my philosophy is, if you don't have 10 minutes for yourself, you don't have a life. And it's the first 10 minutes. So what do? I do this physical change with my breath and my body to change my biochemistry. And then I do 3 minutes of just thinking of three things that I'm incredibly grateful for. And I step in like I'm there. Why gratitude? Because you can't be angry and grateful simultaneously. You can't be fearful and grateful simultaneously. And anger and fear are what mess people up. So I literally wire myself for it. And I make sure one of the three things is something easy, like the wind on my face or the look on my child's face or something. So I don't have to have a mountain of achievement to really feel that gratitude. Then I do 3 minutes of prayer for healing of my own body, my own life, any problem being solved, prayer for those around me, my clients, people. And then I do 3 minutes of what I call my three to thrive, which is what are the three things that I'm most committed to achieving that I think will have the most value and I see and feel them as done. And I say 10 minutes, but it usually feels so good. I go 12, 14, sometimes 18 minutes. But then I'm wired, you know, and by doing it every day, you literally train your nervous system. This is what it's going to be like. And so it's my equivalent of you know, watching the creativity component or my equivalent of, you know, taking the hot coffee versus the cold coffee.
Yeah. So using my example, so, my alarm goes off. I should get up, get my clothes on and go running. Yeah. I don't feel like it. So yeah. Sometimes I climb back in bed. Yeah. It's too cold or, you know, I don't feel like it. Yeah. Whatever. How long should that process take before I'm wired to love to go out and run?
Well, if you make it one of your three to thrive, it's different for everybody. But my guess is less than a few weeks. If you really did it, you're going to have so much internal desire. I mean, think of it this way. There's two types of motivation. There's push and there's pull. If you're trying to push yourself, which is what you're doing with your running right now, I'm glad to see the shoes on and getting you ready for it. But if you're trying to push yourself to run, there are going to be days where you do it, days you're not, right? You know, and you're going to, sometimes you might beat yourself up about or, you know, tell yourself you should, but you still don't. If it's pull, there's something out there you want so much, pull is 100 times more powerful than push because push wears out. Pull does not. And if you can find a pull that is spiritual, emotional, relationship-based, something that's tied to your identity, where this is who I am. Like, I never have to push myself to get on stage to do 50 hours in a weekend, which is incredibly grueling. I'm pulled to it because I'm made for this. I know this is what I'm made to do and create. I know magic's going to come out of this. So it's not a push. And so it's truly, people say, how do you get yourself to do this all the time? It's like, I don't get myself to do it. I'm pulled to do it.
You've been through a lot.
Yeah, we all have.
I guess what I want to know is, you know, now that you've had a certain level of success and achievement, you work with great people, is it easier to start something new now because, you know, you have this hindsight or experience? Or was it easier back then when you had a shorter distance to fall or fail?
I don't have I would be lying to say I don't have concerns or fears at times or stresses about times, but I got a 90-second rule. I look at that as suffering, and I'm not a sufferer. So it's like, in order to have those fears, you have to be focused on yourself. You have to obsess about yourself, like, I might fail, I might lose something, I might have less of something, I might never achieve something. And that's what the brain does. So I just don't put up with that crap, you know? It's like, it's not like I'm this superhuman positive guy and don't have bad or tough times. It's just like, I'm an athlete, you know? When you build your muscles and you use them over and over again, they get bigger, and what was hard is now easy. And I believe that psychological muscles, spiritual muscles, emotional muscles, courage is, you don't use it, you lose it. You use it more, it gets stronger. And all of a sudden people will go, wow, how do you do that? You know, I built it like you can build any muscle. You know, faith is a muscle. Unused, it gets weaker, it doesn't get stronger. Passion, unexpressed, wanes, it doesn't expand. So for me, I find it easier today because I'm more wired than I was ever before. I don't mean wired like just pumped up. I mean like I have been through so much shit in my life, as most of us have been, and I've run so many companies. I face so many challenges. I mean, I have companies, 18 companies. We do $5 billion in sales. 12 I actively manage, and they're like a resort in Fiji, and then there's a coup. You know, it's like you're losing $1 million a month. What am I going to do? You know, I figure out how to get through that. And then I've got, you know, partners in a vitamin company, nutrition company, and it was $250 million, and one of my partners went bankrupt, and it was joint and several, and so now I'm on the hook for, you know, $150 million. You know, it's like, and I didn't have $150 at that time. When you make it through all those elements, you develop a level of certainty that says, I'll find the way, I'll be guided, there's a higher purpose in this, and I'll try something that doesn't work, so I'll try something else. And you just keep shifting until you get there. So for me today, it's easier. Plus, as you get smarter, you know, all of us, as we get older, hopefully, if we keep growing, not every, you know, some people say, I got 10 years of experience, and I look at them and go, no, you got 1 year experience, you did 10 times, right? You haven't grown in 9 years, right? And I'm very direct and honest with people. But if you really have grown, you can do more with your pinky 20 years in, 30 years in, than I used to be able to do using every resource I had. So there's momentum. There's really momentum is such a powerful piece when you make new insights.
What mistakes have you made?
Oh my God. So many.
Well, I ask this because, you know, a lot of people can learn from other people's experience. Yeah, but
oh my God, I'm like, where? I've made mistakes in relationships. I've made mistakes in business. I've made financial mistakes. Which one would you like?
Let's talk about relationships, because has anyone ever betrayed your trust or stabbed you in the back?
Of course. I mean, I don't use that language anymore. You know, someone says, stab me in the back or show me the scars, right? What'd they really do? Well, they stole some money from me. Or most times, you know, they told somebody something I told them not to tell them, and they stabbed you in the back. The reason I say that is our language creates a biochemical change in us. And it's good to become aware of the language you use, because some of it is deliberating or breaking down, I should say, your ability to make progress. But no, early in my business, I had people steal from me. I didn't know how to recruit the right people. I recruited people that I thought were my friends, and they were, but they were incompetent. You know, then I recruited people that weren't my friends but were competent, but they had no integrity. I had, as the example I just gave you, one of my partners in business, I mean, left me with a $150 million bill when I had that much money. But the beautiful thing was I figured out how to get through it, pay it off, make it happen. My level of growth, it's like I look at whatever problem there is, it's going to stay a problem until you have a spiritual breakthrough. Sounds corny, but an insight, a strategy. You build a different muscle. And I've done that so many times at this stage, it's there. In intimate relationships, no one tells you how to pick your partner. So, you know, I married a woman early on, and I really didn't want to get married, but I didn't want her to feel hurt. She was sad, and I married her, right? Really good human being, and instantly had 3 children. So it was a beautiful gift. I stayed 14 years till the kids were gone, and then I finally, at 39, said, you know, I don't want to enter another decade this way, and let's stay friends, let's end this. And, you know, I thought it would be an easy thing to do, and it wasn't. She was very upset that it was ending, and I went through all of those pieces. But every one of those experiences, when I've suffered, when I've experienced financial challenges, emotional challenges, you know, physical challenges, you know, I had a day where a doctor calls me and tells me you got a tumor in your brain. I mean, that alters you. I buried 4 fathers and, you know, 1 mother. It alters you. But through all of that, you develop a clarity about what's really most important in your life. And you learn to let go of all the bullshit and stop making it an excuse for you to be upset. because I just believe life is too short to live pissed off, to live worried, to live frustrated. And so you learn, you move on, and you become better. I mean, that's really what I've done.
Is it as easy as that? I mean,
it's not easy at all. It's horrible. It's tough. It's grind your soul. Yeah. It's, I don't want to give you the illusion I think it's easy, but the more you do it, the easier it gets because you develop the wiring.
Did you hold on to grudges at one point?
I'm not my wife will tell you, sometimes she's been frustrated with me because I'm a pretty forgiving guy. I love people. But I'm not stupid anymore. You know, it's like the frog and the scorpion story. I'm sure you know. It's like, you know, I look at what somebody's nature is. And so, you know, I have people like, I have a friend that did some pretty horrible things years ago. I'm still friends with him, but I might see him once a year. I don't have him in my life every single day. So it's still being intelligent.
Give us kind of the formula to getting unstuck. You know, it's a topic you talk a lot about.
Yeah. Well, first of all, nobody's stuck. I mean, when you give yourself that metaphor, metaphors take over our minds. You know, somebody say, well, oh my God, I'm freaking out. I'm at the end of my rope. I'm at the end of my rope. I said, let go of it and come over here. And they look at me like, you know, or, you know, I'm between a rock and a hard place. Show me where. When you make up these metaphors, they literally take you over. They hypnotize you. So for me, nobody's stuck. I sometimes tease people. I say, if you've ever been to Vegas, you know where that big Hoover Dam is. When they're building that thing, two people fell in. They're still there. They're stuck. If you're not in Hoover Dam, you're not stuck. You know, I'd be playful with people. But if you want to shift your state, which is really what we're talking about, when you're stuck, what you're meaning, you feel overwhelmed, you're stressed, you're depressed, you're whatever. You have to understand that the fastest way to change your state is not with your mind. It's with your body. And if you make a radical change in the way you move, the way you breathe, the way you walk, your shoulders, like if I said to you, there's a depressed person behind curtain number one there, I'll give you $100,000 if you can describe to your favorite charity, if you'll describe for me what they look like without even seeing them behind the curtain. What would you say? What do they look like?
Hands hanging down low. Okay.
Where's their shoulders?
Slumped over.
Yeah, where's their head?
Down.
Yeah. Talking loud or quiet?
Quiet.
Fast or slow?
Slow.
How do you know?
I've been there.
Yes, and we've all been there. But what happens is if you take that same person and you change the shoulder position, you change the breathing, you change the tempo they move, you literally change their biochemistry. And I've done this with the best athletes in the world, presidents of countries, presidents of companies, and then about, I've done what, 38 years now, and then about two or maybe 3 years ago, a woman at Harvard did this study called Power Positions. And what she proved is what I've been showing people all over, but she did scientifically. She showed by standing like Wonder Woman or Superman, in 2 minutes of standing that way, nothing else, your testosterone increase in your body is 20%. Cortisol will drop 18%, which is the stress hormone, and you're 33% more likely to take a risky decision, which entrepreneurs and business people got to do all the time. So I don't just have somebody stand stolid. I show them how to move, breathe, shift, and it's 10 times more dynamic. When you do that, you'll get out of the funk. You can get out of the funk in 2 minutes. But if you sit here and try and think yourself out of it, people get circular thoughts. I mean, have you experienced it yourself? Almost everybody has.
Sure. I mean, you get to a point where you feel like, you know, thinking or feeling something different about it is not going to change. Yeah. You feel like it's the circumstances or the decisions that you've made. You sort of made your bed, now you have to lie in it, right?
And that philosophy is a really important thing you brought up. The only thing that screws you up is limiting beliefs that you don't investigate, that you just accept, right? This idea, I've made my bed and I'm going to leave it. Well, how old is that stupid thought? It's not true. It's something somebody said to you to say, you've got to pay the consequence for this. The consequence is for you to change it. That's the consequence you should go for. Sitting and just accepting the consequence is the stupidest thing you could possibly do. But our culture has hypnotized us. Look before you leap. You're also taught he who hesitates is lost. Now, what the hell are you going to do in between the two? So what I look to do with people is have them uncover what's really stopping them. And it's two things. It's the state you're in. The mental emotional state. When you're pissed off, frustrated, sad, depressed, overwhelmed, you can't fight your way out of a paper bag, right? Because in that state, you're not resourceful. If you are feeling playful or creative or passionate or driven or hungry or grateful, you get a whole different set of insights and thoughts. So it's learning to prime yourself, train yourself, snap yourself out of it physically that makes the difference. But then it's also finding what's holding you there. And what's holding you there is usually a blueprint. A set of beliefs, a set of rules, and you got to investigate them. And I teach people serious techniques on how to blow out the stuff that, frankly, is belief system bullshit. Pretty much the same thing in most cases. If it's a limiting belief system, it's usually bullshit. And when you see the truth it instantly changes the game for you when you witness it, when you experience what's real.
Wow. That's amazing. Maybe look into this camera and give entrepreneurs, small business people, whatever, sort of your best advice for success. You know, first maybe define, this is what we should be focused on. This is the definition of success. Mm-hmm. And maybe here are some tips how to get there.
People ask me all the time, you know, what is success? And it's so individual. I would never tell somebody else what success is. I would say when most people are pursuing success, I think what they're really pursuing is not a word. They're pursuing a greater quality of life. And in order to have an extraordinary quality of life, it's got to be life on your terms. And, you know, some people's idea of an extraordinary life is, you know, writing beautiful poetry or having a garden. Some people's idea is building a $1 billion company. Some people is 3.2 perfect children. I don't know what the 2 comes from, 0.2, but they do. Everyone has a different idea. So my approach to helping entrepreneurs, business people, or anyone is to say, you got to figure out what is an extraordinary life for you. What would that look like today? Not 5 years ago, 10 years ago, but today. The way you look at life alive instead of an old story. And then there's 2 skills you got to master. The first one is the science of achievement. And it's a science. I spent 4 years interviewing these people, and I interviewed the smartest financial people in the world, and I picked no one from the Lucky Sperm Club. Nobody that inherited it. They all started with nothing, became multi-billionaires. And what you learn is they do it different ways, but there's some universal patterns, and success leaves clues. If you apply the same results, it's a recipe. It'll work for you too. I've done it. Other people have done it. Same thing's true with your body. We're all biochemically unique, but there's certain fundamentals that are universal. There are laws. There's a science. If you violate them, you're going to have low energy disease. If you align with them, you're going to have high energy. So there's a science to achievement. But the second master lesson for an extraordinary life, I believe, is even more important. Because I've dealt with so many achievers that are still miserable. They got everything. They got their Academy Award. They got their Golden Globe. They got, you know, they took their company public. They got a $1 billion net worth. And they're miserable. So to me, that's insane. And the reason is they missed the second master lesson of life, which I call the art of fulfillment. Art. It's not science. Because what's going to fulfill you is different than me or this gentleman here. I'm sorry, I don't know the cameraman's first name, but whoever it is that was with you. It's like, if you want to know what the universe or God loves, go to the forest. It's diversity. It's not the same thing. And when you look at, maybe a good example is if you go to an art show. You ever go to an art show in LA or New York, like a high-end art show, and you walk in and you look at the painting and go, you're joking, right? This is not art, right? How much is it? And the guy goes, $10 million. You got to be nuts. I'll give you an example. Steve Wynn, you know, who owns the Wynn Hotels, as again, a good friend of mine, called me up on his birthday a few years ago. He says, Tony, come over to my house. He goes, it's my birthday. I said, I know. I'm looking forward to seeing you. He goes, no, you got to see something. He said, I have coveted this painting for years, and I just outbid everybody. I spent $80 million for this picture. I was like, painting. And I said, oh, my God, I can't wait to see it. So I'm picturing, I don't know, some Renaissance thing. And I show up, and it's a Rothko. Do you know what a Rothko is?
No.
It's an orange and red square, a big, giant orange and red square. And it was $80 million. And I said, Steve, I said, give me $100 of the paint in an hour. I can pull the shit off. I can promise you. And he laughed. He goes, no, you don't know the story. And here's what's so cool. He finds $80 million of the value there because he must be 100 times more sophisticated than I am. Because I'm going, it's an orange and red square, right? The beauty of life is our diversity. If you want to see the ultimate failure in life, it's success without fulfillment. That's the ultimate failure. The art of fulfillment, I think, is the more important of the two. So he asked me to look in the camera and talk to these entrepreneurs and say, you know, what's the most important key to success? I think it's hunger. It's not getting satisfied. You know, if you look at a Mark Benioff at Salesforce, if you look at Richard Branson's friend of mine, or you look at anyone you respect who's achieved at the highest level, intelligence is an incredibly important distinction and a valuable thing to have in life. But I always tell people, you can find so many intelligent people can't fight their way out of a paper bag. What matters is hunger, a hunger that doesn't go away, a hunger to learn, a hunger to grow, a hunger to serve, a hunger to give, a hunger to create breakthroughs. Most people are hungry until they make a certain amount of money and then they get comfortable. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not about the money. It's not about the business. It's about your growth because every one of us either grows or dies. People ask me all the time, what does it take to be happy? I say one word, progress. Progress equals happiness because achieving a goal feels good for how long? A week, a month, 3 months? And then there needs to be something else. And the reason for something else is because you got to grow. And I think If you can decide that success is life on your terms, but it's also a meaningful life where you found something you care about more than yourself that you want to serve, whether it's your family or a community or a mission or your company, then you're blessed. And success is that experience of not only achievement, but fulfillment. And it can't be achieved unless you're growing and unless you're giving in ways that you're not positioning the giving. It's not what other people say. It's what you know in your soul. And I think if you can find those things inside yourself, they're not easy, but they're worth it. You'll have a life that will look like a dream to other people. And they'll all think you're lucky because we're all rewarded in public for what we've practiced continuously in private.
I wanted to take a quick second to thank you for watching and listening. It means the world. Because in 2008, when I created this show, I was in a very different and difficult place. You know, up to that point, I'd worked for about 11 different companies and bosses. My last real job with a paycheck and health benefits was at Universal Pictures, working on the brand marketing and strategy team in the home entertainment division with budgets of over $30 million. I left Universal to pursue my dream of becoming a writer, director, and producer, having my own production company. So my little startup was brand new and self-funded, heading into the Great Recession, and I felt like I was in huge trouble. I created Behind the Brand to solve my own problem. The idea was to produce a show about innovators, entrepreneurs, and the stories behind their success so that we could take a page from their playbooks. Millions of you now watch and listen to my show every month, and I'm so grateful. And over the last few years, I've seen a lot of shows popping up that look like us, which is fine and predictable. But if you're new here, here's how I'm a little bit different. If you asked me how I built this, I would have to answer, it was an original idea born out of necessity, not imitation. I'm not a journalist with a fancy pedigree or someone who's never worked in business. This show is not distributed by one of the largest publishers in the world. We are fiercely independent, and I'm proud of it. I'm not one of these multimillionaires who built a show to promote their huge life insurance company, wine business, or real estate empire, or to sell you self-help programs. Nope, I'm probably a lot like you. I'm married, raising four kids, and running my business. I'm in the trenches every day trying to keep my head above water and figure out how to be a little bit better tomorrow than I was today. I'm your eyes and ears when I go behind the brand. Thank you again for all the love and attention. There's no way I could do this without your support. If you feel like it, don't forget to leave a review with as many stars as you think is fair. I can stand on skill alone, but I'm a package deal. I can write the whole song and rap for real. I got my head in the cloud with a pun intended. I don't need to see nobody. I don't want no visits. Introverted, I just flirt with the music. Small